I'm your host, Jeff Ragavan, and welcome to Alchemy, the podcast all about building a business on the front lines of the new economy.
Welcome back to this week's episode of Alchemy. Very excited to welcome Ishan Baumick. He's the Global Vice President at GfK. He's a great guy, super knowledgeable, been in the space for a really long time, been in the agency world, was over at Microsoft, and really focusing on data and insights and servicing really great brands. So welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Jeff, it's an honor. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, you know, I think probably best to kick off, obviously, you know, you've been doing some really great stuff. You know, prior to GfK, you were at another subsidiary of the business at MRI, but really focusing on, you know, data partnerships and advanced TV insights. And so, you know, we worked with you guys, you know, on this really fantastic, you know, cannabis study, you know, working on the data, really talking about, you know, data-driven stories around our audiences. So I think it might be great just to kick things off and, you know, talk to us a little bit about, you know, what we did together, and then, you know, kind of going into maybe some of the interesting trends and insights for the cannabis space for this year.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, thanks for having me. I was working a lot with your colleagues in the marketing teams, so Conrad and company, and they were looking to see how they could speak the language of the brands and the agencies better, right? So how can we say, okay, we can say all day that cannabis consumers are important. But let's talk about MRI Simmons data, which is by and far what's used widely in media planning today in the, for U.S. agencies. And we have a cannabis study that we've been doing for since 2018, so one of the longest running ones, and measures all types of consumer behavior around cannabis and CPD and THC.
Wait, really quick, just to interrupt you. So why did you guys decide we're going to do a study on cannabis? You know, especially with everything else that's going on, like, what was the priority for you there? Because a lot of people were somewhat hesitant and conservative a few years ago. We're like, hey, let's see what, where this goes. Yep. You guys went all in. So I'm just curious on the thinking there.
Yeah, we have what's called a national study, and that is around 50,000 folks that is normalized and calibrated to the entire U.S. general population. And then what we do is we have these focus studies that hang off that and that are fused back to the national studies. So we are all about very topical trends, right? And cannabis was one of them. Esports is one of them. Crypto is one of them. So these all hang off of our nationally syndicated study. And it's, again, additional question, a battery of questions that we can't get into the regular syndicated study, but they're very top of mind and people are interested. So it's just really demand driven. And we're really happy to be amongst the first to see that this was an emerging trend, especially in topics that the agencies cared about.
Cool. All right. That makes a lot of sense. What was maybe some of the feedback that you got, at least in the industry, when you released the study? And I remember you and Conrad did that webinar. Must have been 2020, I think.
Yep.
I feel like it was okay, and you guys did a really great job. But what was some of the feedback you got from like brands and consumers that were like, whoa, we had no idea?
Right. I mean, I think the biggest feedback we got back then were the normalization of the cannabis consumer, right? Before it was all about, okay, who are these folks? Are they the stoner, that, you know, the stoner stereotype? And no, you know, the biggest thing that I mentioned back then was, okay, they over-index on being triathletes. And if that's not going to blast away your stereotype of the regular person on the couch smoking marijuana, nothing else will. And I think a lot of this was based on pain management for CBD, of course. So yeah. We're seeing a lot of trends that are intersecting with a lot of others in consumer overall. So pain management is one of them, health and wellness, the desire to, you know, eat healthier and eating clean. All of those trends that are global consumer trends are dovetailing really well in the cannabis industry.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting. You know, as we kind of did that partnership and we started to really run pretty hard on the traditional brand side, we learned so much about some of these verticals that we had no idea about. So, you know, we were talking to a major beer company. What was so interesting about them is they're like, hey, we are really interested in your data, because what we've been seeing, especially like during COVID, is like beer sales for us actually declined, you saw like some of the spirit companies increase because people were like, you know, drinking every night and having like hard liquor. But when it comes to beer, they weren't having parties. They literally weren't having friends over. And so beer sales actually went through a little bit of somewhat of a slump. Mm-hmm. And they're like, hey, we're launching new products this year after the Super Bowl. And like, we have already talked to our consumers. They have told us specifically, we're drinking less because we are in states where cannabis is legal. And so they're taking an edible on the weekend to unwind, or taking an edible at night to sleep, or whatever it might be. And so they're like, we want to target those consumers that we know are defecting to trying other legal products. And I think it was for the first time that I saw this, where they almost were, they're like, we need to play defense for the cannabis industry. You know, like cannabis is actually eroding at market share for some of these beverages, because people are like, you know, I think it's this new term, California sober, which I never heard of until this past year in 2022. And people are like, yeah, they're doing, you know, cannabis products and psilocybin, even illegal things that aren't legal yet, and they're drinking less, right? And so I think there's a big shift right now happening in the entire spirit and beer industry, where there's now a new, there's a new sheriff in town, I guess, if you think about it, because cannabis has really swept through the country from, you know, the major states that are now legal. It's kind of like, hey, man, you want to hang out Thursday night and smoke a joint? Or, you know, there's these microdosing edibles now that people are taking, you know, at a party so that they're not, you know, too messed up, but they can have a good time. And I think that's going to shape 23 this year more than we ever know. Like 420 this year, I think there's going to be so many brands taking part in the conversation because it's mainstream. It's no longer niche.
Yep. And then the data backs it up. So for any brands that are looking to get more insights, it's reflected in the MRI Simon study. So we've seen, for example, the highest increase in, like you said, liquor and beer infused, the interest going the highest in beer and cocktails and liquor, and also in places that we didn't realize, like pet treats, right? A lot of people are interested in cannabis infused pet treats. And in fact, that was the highest jump in cannabis interest. Of course, things that we've known about, which is skincare and beauty products, but things like soft drinks, coffee, and tea. So you talked about, you know, maybe vices, but hey, if people are wanting to cut back on caffeine, cannabis is also an alternative.
Totally. I think one of the things that I definitely wanted to talk to you about today is, you know, I know that you're helping companies really with these great insights, but specifically, you know, some of your strategics like Snap and TikTok and Amazon. I just wanted to ask you, because this just happened literally this morning. I don't even know if you saw this, but Twitter, you know, Elon tweeted the other day 420. And then lo and behold, the day after Valentine's Day, Twitter says, by the way, we're now taking cannabis ads. But if you look at their terms of service and you look at their policies, it says, but you can't market cannabis products with THC. So I think they have a little bit of work to do on like rolling this out. But, you know, they're the first platform to kind of announce that they're now taking cannabis ads. What are your thoughts around that?
I think that's a huge deal. And it was frankly the reason why we approached Philo back when we had our data to syndicate. And I say our as in MRI Simmons data. We had our data that was basically being prohibited in the places like Oracle Data Marketplace. And so we said, okay, we are building possible syndicated data sets for cannabis. From a survey perspective, I know you guys are getting it from sales data. We have our data from our survey, and we wanted places for it, and we couldn't find any. So we, you know, started building that relationship and partnership with your partnerships team, and then found out that the marketing team wanted to just purchase the actual cannabis study itself.
So, by the way, I want to read this to you, literally word for word from Twitter today. We permit approved cannabis, including CBD, cannabinoids, advertisers to target in the United States, subject to the following restrictions. Advertisers must be licensed by the appropriate authorities and pre-authorized by Twitter. Advertisers may only target jurisdictions in which they license to promote these products or services online. This is the interesting one, Ishan. Advertisers may not promote or offer the sale of cannabis, including CBD. Exceptions. Ads for topical, non-ingestible, hemp-derived CBD products contain equal or less than 0.3% THC. Huh? So basically what that says to me is we're opening up for cannabis, but you can't market cannabis. Right. And here's another one, which I think is super interesting. And obviously we're a compliance first company. So we know the rules on what you can and can't do from state and local jurisdictions. But this is another one that they add in it here. Advertisers are responsible for complying with all applicable laws, rules, regulations, and advertising guidelines. So basically, right, they're not going to police whether you're compliant or not. But I will tell you right now, if you're going to put stuff out there that's not compliant, the regulators are going to be all on this. It's like, I mean, happy that they did it, but at the same time, it's like, guys, get your, you know, get your story right. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about other, you know, consumer industries. Like, what are you seeing out there as far as, you know, key drivers of growth? I saw, it was this morning, I think, there was an article on some retail magazine, but they said January numbers were up big. Like, people were spending a lot of money despite inflation.
Yep.
A lot of weird headwinds going on right now because of the macroeconomic conditions out there. You know, it's kind of like every day we look at the news and it's like, which company laid off whom? You're talking at, I don't know, 250,000 employees since the start of the year laid off.
Yep. Right, right.
In tech.
That's yeah. So what's interesting is I also saw a post by, you know, Scott Galloway, whoever you think about him, he put some interesting stuff out there and he had a bar graph about the people that were laid off from the top tech companies and then the hires that they did during the pandemic. And you can tell it's like a huge bar graph for the hires and a smaller bar graph, obviously, for the layoffs, which adds a tiny bit of perspective, right? So there was a ton of hires over the pandemic. And I think that's worth mentioning. Of course, you know, you could argue that, you know, layoffs are, there shouldn't be layoffs, right? Because then that just shows, you know, an over hiring in general. But I think context is important, right? So we did have a ton of additional hires for the tech industry because of all that growth, right? And some of that has gone away, and especially in terms of e-commerce. And I see that with my, you know, client Amazon. But in general, Amazon has become a beast in terms of retail media. And that's definitely a topic that I've not become an expert by any stretch of the imagination, but definitely been a sponge, especially in the last 6 to 8 months, where there's so much information about how retail media is going to be that third wave people talk about after search and social in terms of advertising. And I love how Filo Connect is right there and offering an opportunity for the cannabis industry to get into retail media when maybe they don't know exactly how, or they don't have the inventory to do so. Rolling that type of inventory up and putting it in brick and mortar, where I believe most of the operators are in brick and mortar. And it, you know, for cannabis specifically, it seems like a really important to have that brick and mortar presence and to have that retail presence, especially with the screens that you guys are putting up.
Well, it's gonna. By the way, Sean, can you see the screen behind me?
Yes, yes, I can. I see that going on.
This is our 43-inch model, but you know, obviously, we've been rolling this out pretty heavily the last 6 to 8 months in cannabis. So we're across the entire country. We've got these in like 1,200 stores. And the idea is that we get people in, we get them to engage with the screens, we get them to shop because they're fully interactive. But then, of course, the brands that are in those stores can also promote. And so we're building that model for them. But I'm really excited just with our backgrounds kind of being in the ad tech space for the last 20 years, mm-hmm. you know, we're rolling these out across airports, malls. Like, these are actually going into Payne Field, north of Seattle, in the next couple of weeks, where, you know, it's, if you haven't heard of Payne Field, it's literally like one of the most beautiful airports in the country. It's the Four Seasons of airports. And what's interesting is that people actually go there early to hang out.
Oh, wow.
Like, the last thing you could possibly think about, like, I'm not going to go to the airport early. Unless, of course, I'm going to London. I'm in London. I'm flying on Virgin. I want to be in the Virgin Lounge, right? That's a different thing.
Right. Right.
Payne Field is like, they've got fireplaces and they've got, you know, a bar and restaurants. And it's just, it's like very loungy and very high end. And so people will go to the airport 2 hours early, not because they need to, because they just want to relax. And so the screens are going to be strategically placed all over the airport. We've got advertisers that have already, you know, been very excited saying, hey, we want that user who's going to be captivated with these screens. I want to be able to engage with them through our loyalty programs, through offers. And so it's been super fun because the screens are like blank canvases. Like people can customize them however they want. You could put full app experiences on them.
Yes. And so, people go to the airport, people go to brick and mortar, and moreover, these are going to be an ability to reach those hard to reach audiences that are stopping watching linear TV and stopping to, you know, do a lot of different types of media activities. They're still be out and about. They're going to still shop in person. They're still going to go to airports, like you mentioned. And I think this is why retail media is seeing the growth that it is. People are there, you know, especially at a brick and mortar to already shop. So they're closer to that consideration point. And especially in cannabis, the consideration isn't very large, right? So either you're there and you're going to buy, and sometimes you're going to buy ancillary products, and that's going to be all part of this experience that you guys are setting up. And I love it. I dig it.
Listen, it's super exciting, but it gives us the ability, at least as a company, it's our flywheel, right? It's like, here are the screens, and then I could actually drive programmatic into those locations. So it's out of home, it's digital, it's everything together. You know, it's kind of, it's just taking everything that we do and solidifying it, which is like, it gets me super excited. At least when we're talking about retail media, I do hear, you know, a lot of brands, you know, kind of coming up saying, hey, we want to create our own retail media network. You know, seen this the last few years with some of the Targets of the world kind of using their own data. Supermarkets, obviously, it makes, you know, a ton of sense. Anything that you could kind of give us like insight in as far as like what's really driving the growth, you know, of retail media today?
Yeah, well, I mentioned that people are interested in that full funnel attribution, right? And kind of Google almost invented it with search. And now that first party data is becoming more important and all of these online signals are going away, attribution and measurement are still going to be key. So retail media is attracting a lot of budgets because it is that connection to sales that all the brands and agencies care about. And since these folks are going to own it and actually even provide it to, you know, the open web with, you know, Amazon having its own DSP and so forth and so on, it's just going to be that much more important to connect the return on ad spend to the campaigns and the dollars that these brands are asking for. So that's where I see, you know, it just becomes a continuation of that first party data story. You know, as first party data is going to be more and more owned by the folks that are in the retail media space, that's why you see companies like CVS getting into retail media. They have all that first party data. If they can connect it to the campaign and show that return on ad spend for the brand advertiser, then it's going to be what they're craving. And as you know, Jeff, it's becoming more and more complicated for a marketer because all the platforms are proliferating, all the walled gardens are getting bigger walls and more of them. So, you know, that's kind of like my second soapbox is you need independent third-party measurement. And that's what GfK does. It says, okay, let's compare apples and oranges to something like apples and apples. Let's go across all the channels and across all the different platforms because you can't grade your own homework. You can't, you know, say, okay, Amazon's studies themselves are going to show great return on ad spend, but what is an independent third-party measurer of these products going to say?
So final question, then before we break, I just want, you know, get to know you a little better with some quick-fire questions. As more and more brands are thinking about, you know, retail media, and as we kind of march towards, you know, we're now in February, so obviously getting past first quarter, I think we're going to start seeing like retail media network is going to be way buzzworthy this year. Anything a brand can be doing to prepare or at least capitalize on that growth as you're kind of, you know, talking to a lot of folks, especially in retail?
Yeah, I would imagine that brands are looking at their budgets and they're saying, okay, what can we move to retail media to test it out if they haven't already, right?
Yep.
And I would encourage them to look at their performance budgets, but their brand budgets, right? The top of the funnel kind of money that they're interested in promoting a brand, and encourage that money to be allocated for retail media? Because there's a lot of brand opportunities. A lot of people, I think, are thinking of retail media for performance because it makes sense at the bottom of the funnel, closer to purchase data. But companies like GfK have abilities to measure that top of the funnel. And when I say top of the funnel, I mean like the cumulative long-term effects of a campaign. And it's harder because you have to start doing things in data science, but it is here now. And it's great because what's old is new again. Things like mixed market modeling are back into fashion because of that. And you'll find out that a significant portion of a brand's budget goes to long-term ROI. It's just been harder in the past to measure that. But now we have companies like us that measure that properly. So yeah. I would just say to a brand marketer, okay, think about your brand budgets, maybe the stuff that you were earmarking for TV and linear TV, and think about those budgets. Because right now, you know, I see it as a little bit myopic if you're just thinking about things like your performance budgets, your search budgets, those types of budgets.
Okay, quick fire questions. Are you ready?
I am.
What is it that you're watching on television that you absolutely love right now?
Okay, so I'm trying to finish up The Walking Dead so I can get to The Last of Us.
By the way, on our last episode on this podcast, we talked about The Last of Us.
Okay.
And I felt very Walking Dead-ish in the beginning. Yep. But I have to tell you, it's so fucking good.
Okay, it's different, right?
It's different, and it's captivating, and I was like, what is this?
Right. Okay, good.
I'm saying, dude.
I was kind of like a Walking Dead super fan, and then I felt like they kind of just made it go too long, so I'm just kind of trying to finish it up, and I'm so glad that you're saying that, because I'm really excited about Last of Us.
Yeah, it's very entertaining. Okay, let's talk about food. Favorite food? Are you in New York? Yeah, you're in New York. Favorite food? Like maybe to cook or even to eat, but what's your favorite restaurant in New York?
Oh man, favorite restaurant. Well, here's the deal. I'll do favorite going out to eat cuisine, because I think that's a big different question than, you know, favorite food. Going out to eat cuisine is Ethiopian. That's pretty hands down. And I read an article last month that drew the similarities between Ethiopian food and Indian food. And I never really thought about it. And I was like, oh, whoa, that's really interesting. It's probably why I love Ethiopian food. Cause it's like a little bit different from Indian food, but different enough to be really exotic to me and my palate.
I never had Ethiopian food in my life until September. I was in Israel.
Okay.
I had the most amazing evening with like these Ethiopian Jews.
Nice.
Literally, they left Ethiopia years and years ago with their families, and they live in Israel now. And they literally cook the most delicious, so good. And I was like, well, man, I've now like 45 years of my life, I've missed out on Ethiopian food because I didn't think I'd like it. But it was great. Yep. I like also using like the breads and stuff.
The injera, yep.
And just using your hands and like...
Yeah, so it speaks to me as a South Asian in many different ways. And here in New York, there's great Ethiopian food. I mean, a lot of it's in Brooklyn, but I've been told there is great Ethiopia. I haven't yet checked it out, but in Staten Island, I've heard there's...
All right, maybe that'll be our first dinner together for lunch.
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right, so last question before we break. It's 2023. It's been a hell of a January and part of February already. What are you most excited about for this year? Could be life, could be work, could be anything.
We could talk about, retail. I'm going to go back to retail media. I think it's just going to be I know it's a buzzy buzzword, but there's going to be a lot of moving and shaking in retail media. And it's going to be from places that we didn't see coming, I believe. A lot of different players are going to get into it. And I think that there's going to be these, we've already seen one. I saw Roku and DoorDash do a collaboration.
I saw that yesterday.
Yeah, we're going to see lots of very interesting collaborations and partnerships. And it's going to be that retail media isn't just for retail anymore. I'm curious to see where, folks that have presence are going to actually create ads that are built for retail media. It was always the case where, you know, you see, you know, the first TV ads were just repurposed radio ads, right? So we'll see a lot of formats in retail media start to come into their own. And I think that that's exciting, right? We start seeing display screens when you're getting ice cream at the frozen food aisle, that's going to be interesting. Lots of different formats and technologies are going to go into and capitalize on the number of sheer eyeballs and traffic that you see. You know, everybody and anyone, Gen Z, millennials, and Gen Xers and boomers, they have to go to a grocery store. They have to go to these different types of brick and mortar outlets. So capitalizing on all that is, I think, I agree, it's going to be that third wave.
Awesome. Well, listen, this was great to have you on. Loved the insight. This was super fun. Actually, this has been one of my favorite episodes because we had so much to talk about. There's so much news. No, I appreciate you coming on. Obviously, you know, we love the partnership with you guys. You guys are amazing. And for everybody who's tuning in, Ishan Baumick, he's the Global Vice President of GFK. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
This episode of the Alchemy Podcast was brought to you by Philo. Thanks for tuning in. And if you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and share.